This is Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, on your flagship station of the Jacksonville Jaguars. News Talk Radio WOKV. To join Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, and Vic Ketchman, dial 355-NFL-1. That's 355-6351. Outside the Jacksonville calling area, dial 1-800-355-NFL-1. Jaguars This Week is brought to you in part by Prudential Network Realty, Ticket Exchange, and by the Jacksonville Transportation Group. Now, here's the voice of the Jaguars, Brian Sexton.
Hello and good evening. Welcome to Jaguars This Week. Wednesday night, December the 2nd. Looks like the rain is starting to fall out there. If you are listening on your car radio, put both hands on the wheel, please.
It's starting
safely.
To rain. Not the rain is falling, because it doesn't do anything else but fall. It's starting to rain.
Well, I guess we're expecting quite a storm here this evening. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. I got covered my tomatoes.
Hi, Jeff. Pull out the old farmer's almanac.
Is that what they call it now?
You've never grown a plant in your life.
Oh, some fungus.
People may have given you plants, but every one of them have died.
Yeah, I once, during my long extended period of divorce, someone said to me at this time of year during the Christmas season, you don't have a tree or anything. And I said, I won't use the name. It would incriminate me. But I said, honey, the only green thing in this house during Christmas is the bread.
Oh my goodness! The stories you're bringing back.
Now I'm back.
You're
full family flower.
Absolutely.
And I was, I complained about the trip to San Francisco. That extra day in San Francisco, how boring it was. You know, got up at 5 o'clock in the morning. I've got nothing to do all day. Well, I didn't tell all. Sometime at like 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning Pacific time, it hit me that Bonnie was at home putting up all the Christmas decorations, and I instantly felt blessed to be in San Francisco in a 2x2 room with nothing to do but watch Clemson throw incompletions against South Carolina. It felt wonderful.
Do you have Boris Karloff in the Grinch? Just for fun.
Come on. Ask the listeners. You will not find one man, there's not one man out there that wants to put up a Christmas tree. The two most awful days of the year are the day the tree goes up and the day the tree goes down.
I like putting up a Christmas tree.
Baloney.
I do.
Come on.
I enjoy the holiday spirit.
I don't like putting up the tree and all those decorations.
Oh, it's not that bad. Come on, Vic.
It's awful.
Your buddy Glenn doesn't come over to help? The tinkly glass?
You know what they said in the movie Christmas Vacation? I had Jack Daniels to get me through this.
We need to get you some green face paint. Here he is. Vic Ketchman. Live from Grinch Mountain.
Mr. Grinch.
My first wife. Kill it. Kill it!
As cuddly as a cactus, you're as charming as an eel.
We're only a couple of days into this Christmas season already. You are on fire tonight, Vic.
My first wife had a holiday season fetish. And I went away on a road trip to cover a game. When I came back, I found out she had purchased a 20-foot, four-sectioned artificial Christmas tree.
20-foot tall?
Yeah. Spent a fortune on this thing the whole bit.
It fit in your house?
We had just built a house. It had a cathedral ceiling. And it was a small house.
You know, Vic, PA sports writer, big money.
Yeah, baby. And I had it wouldn't stand. It was wobbly, and I had wires all over the ceiling, the walls, to hold this thing up. It was just a nightmare. I'm going to tell you, that tree contributed to the divorce. Seriously.
Here's the question. She no longer has you. Does she still have the tree?
I think she kept the top piece.
Because that by itself was enough to be a Christmas
tree. That's right. The top section alone was a good sized tree.
She kept it as a reminder of a place that she will never go back to.
The 20-foot tree.
Once from the ladder, as I, you know, you put the, the ornaments on
that's
the
why
very
she
top.
Bought it. She was trying to get you to fall off of the ladder.
I dropped an ornament on her head.
So that is what contributed towards your not wanting to be.
It did not help matters. I mean, I just Christmas trees are just so tough to put up. A lot of sap.
Hey, how come San Francisco? By the way, did you guys see any Christmas stuff in San Francisco?
I didn't see a tree. I didn't see anything.
Are they against Christmas in San Francisco?
Well, some might say they are, but there was a tree at Fisherman's Wharf.
Union Square had a huge tree
and too. There was one at Fisherman's Wharf too.
I was just wondering. I didn't see.
Jeff, you're right. I didn't see anything in the hotel lobby.
No,
that was just an hotel. What did you think?
You know what fascinated me the most? The fact that at halftime, somebody sang God Bless America. Somebody's going to lose their job over that.
Why?
It's San Francisco. What do they care about God?
Whoa. When did they become godless?
San Francisco doesn't stand for saint.
There is a huge cathedral right in the middle of San Francisco, too.
Yeah. What was wrong with your room?
It's really a weird beginning.
I'm not complaining.
But I like it.
It's a little small. This team
doesn't travel well because the rider doesn't travel well.
It could be part of the problem. The door between the sink area and the toilet shower area, there was a separate door. It cleared the lip of the toilet by less than an inch. You had to be in and down. You could not have one foot out. I mean, you had to be all the way in and all the way down to close the door.
Never been a show start like this. Welcome to the holiday season.
My room was so small, it didn't have a chair. Did not have a chair. This is you had a choice of one of three positions. Lying down, standing up, or sitting on the toilet. Those were your options.
Perspective, ladies and gentlemen, you have it here like nowhere else on the radio.
And I can hear people going, are you guys going to talk about the football? Jaguars?
They, you know. Okay, let's talk about the football.
Let's do it after this break. We'll take this quick timeout and return with some football, I think, on Jaguars This Week. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Hey, we're hearing all kinds of reports about severe weather that is either in our listening area or about to be in the listening area. So, seriously, folks, if you're driving, put both hands on the wheel. If you don't have to drive, don't go out. And, of course, the professionals over at WOKV will keep you up to date with all the weather that's coming through the evening, our show included. 355-NFL-1.
So we make sure that we talk football.
Let's do it.
All right. Write this down. Write these things down. We need to talk about that offense-only meeting. All right, so we get the nuts and bolts stuff that the fans want. I know they want to talk about David Garrard and Jeff. I know did some smart board stuff on Monday night. We need to talk about that.
Okay,
right?
Sure.
Okay. I want to talk about, can this team hold up? Can its secondary hold up against Andre Johnson without Rasheem Mathis?
Okay.
Let's talk about schedules going forward for the 3, 6, and 5 teams: Ravens, Steelers, Jaguars.
Folks, you are listening live to a production meeting for Jaguars This Week.
Let's start with that.
All right, there you go. Joe, you okay with that?
So we make sure we touch some bases so no one can complain.
No, absolutely. Scobie. You good with that?
Scobie.
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go. Let's start with number 3 and talk about Rasheem Mathis in particular, because Jack Del Rio on these airwaves last night told everybody that he was not going to play. And so now we know that it's going to be Tyron Brackenridge and Derek Cox. How do the Jaguars deal with Andre Johnson, 63 catches, 954 yards, 5 touchdowns, and probably the best receiver in the game, wouldn't you say?
Two guys coverage. I mean, that's what it's got to be. You got to have two guys on him, and so this may be another game where Kevin Walter has a big day, but you live with it, you know, because you're going to put the safety over the top of Andre Johnson because he's their home run guy, he's their go-to guy. And then you put single coverage on Kevin Walter, which in the last game, even with Rasheen, Kevin Walter had a pretty big game. If I remember correctly, he had like 6 or 7 catches.
I'm looking for the game here a couple years ago where he had like 180 yards.
Oh, yeah.
Now, don't forget Owen Daniel is out. He's gone.
He's out. That helps the tight end.
Right.
And he probably, Owen Daniel probably, maybe the second fastest tight end in the game. second only to the guy in Denver. Shuffler?
The kid from Western Michigan.
Shuffler, I believe it is.
Yeah.
The tight end in Denver, Shuffler, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tony
Fantastic
Shuffler.
Player. He's got the probably the best speed of any tight end. Mm-hmm. Owen Daniels was right there, and obviously losing him was a big blow to them.
So how do they overcome that? He was their third receiver.
Can they overcome that?
Joel Dressen's not good.
Well, I mean, they have. I mean, you look at the numbers, and Houston, they haven't missed a beat.
But they've lost three games.
Well, they've lost three games, but, I mean, the production on offense has just been fantastic. The only problem that they have had has been the production at the key moment.
Yeah.
And that's hurt them. You know, in a last week's game against Indianapolis, and I don't know how many people saw that, but we had a chance to see some of it because they were playing before the Jaguars, and so we were watching it in the booth prior to going on the air with the game. But from watching the tape, there were two passes that Matt Schaub had in the second half that when you look at it, you go, what was he throwing to? And then there was a sack-caused fumble, and I forget who caused it. It doesn't matter. But, I mean, when you have three giveaways as an offense against Indianapolis in the second half, and then you kick a field goal when you should have had a touchdown if Andre Johnson holds on to the ball in the first half, that's how you lose. I mean, and that's been the story of that team, is that they haven't produced in key moments. If they produce in key moments, oh, man.
Well, they had a chance.
This team's good.
They had the chance to beat the Colts twice. They had a shot to beat the Texans.
Had a shot to beat the Jaguars, and they fumbled the ball on the goal line. I mean,
their defense still stinks, right?
No, their defense is playing a lot better. I mean, going into the game against the Jaguars, which was, what, week three? They were the first 3 weeks of the season, and this obviously comes from their numbers. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. They were allowing 205 yards rushing a game.
They were number 32 in the league against
the run. They were terrible.
Right.
They've made a few tweaks to the lineup. They've made some changes schematically. And I think since that point, they've been allowing 80-something yards a game rushing. I mean, this is a defense that's turned the corner. So it's not the same team that they faced in Houston, but it's still the same team at crunch time that they faced
in
Houston.
Did you think the Jaguars would beat San Francisco?
I thought that game was 50-50 at best because and what concerned me, and I told you this before the game, in that the way San Francisco played in the first couple weeks of the season, if that team showed up, the Jaguars would struggle, and that's the team that showed up.
Okay, so what odds are you making this week, Jeffy the Greek?
I think this is a 50-50 game.
So another 50-50.
Yeah. And I think that's being a little bit generous, I think. I mean,
well, considering that they throw the ball well and you don't rush the passer and you're missing Rasheen Mathis, that's a great...
I mean, hey, if you're going to... Look at Matt Schaub's numbers the first time out, okay?
Three touchdown passes.
I mean, he was 116 rating, three touchdowns. He had the one interception on the first drive to Rasheen. Well, Rasheen's not there now. This is a tough task. You know, if the Jaguars can find a way to get pass rush and dominate their running game, absolutely they win. If they don't dominate the running game, because in the first half against
Maurice dominate like he did there.
Yes, in the first half against Indianapolis, this is the Houston game this past Sunday. They were running the ball all over Indianapolis in the first half. They had 90 yards rushing, and what they love to do is play action, and that's really where Matt Schaub, I think, really excels. In the second half, they couldn't run the ball very effectively, and Matt Schaub had mistakes. I mean, so, you know, if the Jaguars can dominate the running game, they've got a chance on defense. I think they got a chance on offense because I think Houston is not a great team against the pass. They've had, I don't know how many different lineups in the secondary all year long, but, I mean, a large number of different lineups in the secondary because of injury and because of performance.
355-NFL-1, 355-6351. So your prognostication on Wednesday.
I see the Jaguars at a disadvantage. I think this is more than 50-50. I think this one is 60-40 against them, and it's because of Rasheen Mathis not being in the lineup. This is the week. You really, really needed him. Really need him. You really, you know, you didn't need him that much against Buffalo, or at least you didn't think so.
Terrell Owens got...
Yeah, but I mean, they just weren't that good.
Right.
And San Francisco, their Achilles heel all season has been throwing the ball. So you figure if there's two games that you can get away with not having Rasheem Mathis, those are two of them anyhow that you would certainly think you could get by without him, or would have your best chance to get by without him. And they almost didn't get by in either one. I mean, frankly, we got to remember, Buffalo had two touchdowns called back. One of them was a 53-yard touchdown pass. I forget what the other one was.
You know, the other thing that would may add to that 60% you're talking about? What if Gary's Kubiak team's been in the month of December?
Good.
Yeah, but this is This is different. In the past, he's always been the coach who's looking toward the future. There's a little bit of lame duck quality to Gary Kubiak right now because the wolves are howling, and I think his players pretty much know that he's out. He's done. This is the owner's not.
He's not out yet.
No, but the ice is getting real, real thin, and I wonder. That's what I wonder about them. Is there any chance that we could see some quit in them this Sunday? They're kind of out of this, Jeff. And this was supposed to be a playoff year.
Out. They're 5-6. I mean, and
you know, the one thing
they got a tough schedule. They got to win them all then. They've got a tough schedule.
Here's the one thing against them. 5 of those 6 losses are conference losses.
Yeah, they got to win them all. They have to win out.
They're 2-5 in the AFC, so they're well behind in the tie-breaking.
I just think though that hey, what the heck? Let's get a phone call.
We're at the bottom of the hour here. We've got about 90 seconds, so there's
really I'll give you my expert analysis of Sunday. This is a must win. Not one of many must wins. This one. You got to win this one. This is an absolute must win.
If you're going to keep your playoff hopes alive.
Right.
Absolutely.
If we're talking playoff. Absolutely. You know, we're not just talking winning record or 8-8 and avoid losing record. We're talking now about the playoffs because this is December. This is the first week of December, and this team is in the lead for the second wild card spot.
Right.
We can't ignore
that. They're in the 6th hole right now.
All right. But look at these other teams' schedules. Jaguars have to win.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we will do that as we roll along here over the next hour and a half with Vic Ketchman, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato, and you. Phone lines are stacked, and we will get right to you when we return from news here at the bottom of the hour. Obviously, they'll have an update on all of the weather conditions and the weather that's coming that you need to know about. So stay with us. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, only on AM 690 and on 106.5 on your FM dial. News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio, WOKV.
All right, so plenty more to talk about here. There was an offense-only meeting that we need to touch on. Jeff and some work at the smart board. Look at the Jaguars' schedule and the schedule of the other opponents, pardon me, the other teams that are still in the race for the wild card. Talk about Josh Scobie, but the phone lines are stacked.
Oh,
no one left.
That always takes precedence.
And so we'll do that first. And let's grab Michael, who joins us from Nashville, Tennessee. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
Hey, first of all, I just want to say it's been so much fun watching our young team progress over this season. And no matter what happens, if we make it to the playoffs or not, I'm just going to be happy our arrow is pointing up. But anyways, my question is, out of the rookies, Mike Thomas, Derek Cox, and Terrence Knighton have been amazing, obviously, but it seems like the two rookie offensive tackles are still struggling a little bit, especially Monroe. So I was just wondering if you think they might still be going through growing pains a little bit, or should we start to worry about them a little?
No, I just think that's growing pains. I thought that Eugene struggled more in San Francisco probably than Eben. Eben now 2 weeks ago against Buffalo may have had his best game yet.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Eugene played exceptionally well in the Buffalo game. I thought he played well in the weeks prior to that. I mean, so these guys were making progress. I thought, though, that Eugene in the game in San Francisco, the 3-4 and some of the looks that they gave him, he struggled. And also remember, Justin Smith is one heck of a football player that he lined up against, so you got to remember that as well. But no concerns there. They're both working hard. I think Eugene finishing better than he did earlier in the year, and Eben continues to work hard as he always has.
In my opinion, the tackles are not the problem and not the issue. What's going on inside is a much, much bigger issue because those aren't rookies.
Yeah, the Vince got pushed around a little bit in San Francisco. Justin Smith got on him and pushed him around, and usually you don't see Vince get pushed around.
That interior line has not played well the last couple of weeks.
Last couple of weeks, yeah. Kyle Williams in the Buffalo game had a good day, and then I thought that the San Francisco defensive front, because since they played 3-4, it could have been a couple different guys, played pretty well against them. No question, in the middle, it has to tighten up.
Can it?
Hey, look, you know, I said this before the game, that Abreu Franklin, the nose tackle for the 49ers, Justin Smith, heck of a football player, Sopoaga, the other defensive end, one of the strongest guys in the league, that this would be a tough test for those guys up front, and that's what it was. I mean, to say, look, those guys on the other side of the field are pretty good too now.
355-NFL-1, 355-6351. Let's grab Brandon in Erie, Pennsylvania. Hello, Brandon.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi. My question was concerning Gene Smith. Vic, you touched on this a little bit earlier in the week. In my local paper earlier in the year, they wrote a nice article when Gene got promoted to Jags GM,
mm-hmm.
and it gave a little background about how he started as an assistant football coach at Edinburgh University.
Right. He was a recruiting coordinator at Edinburgh.
Okay. Well, that's just about 20 minutes from my house, so that was
right.
A cool for me. I was just wondering, in this same article, it pointed out that, you know, he called himself a closet Browns fan. I understand that's like a hometown thing, but the local sports radio is really starting to heat up with rumors about the Cleveland thing, and I know you touched on that a little bit. I was just wondering if you could clear that up a little bit more, and I'll take it off the air with that. Thanks,
okay.
Guys.
Tony Grossi of the Cleveland Plain Dealer wrote a story in the Plain Dealer on Sunday. It was published on Sunday, I should say. And the gist of Tony's story was, hey, everybody, if one of these high-priced, glitzy candidates to be the Browns' new personnel czar, such as Mike Holmgren, doesn't work out. In other words, instead of Randy Lerner paying a king's ransom for Mike Holmgren, Bill Cowher, Ernie Accorsi, he threw out some names, which are the prominent, the
most
very
recognizable names,
the glitzy names. Instead of throwing money at these guys and ending up with another avalanche of contract money that has to be paid off, Tony said the Browns ought to look for a no-name guy named Gene Smith, all right? And then he went on to detail Gene's accomplishments here, cleaning up the roster and his success with these draft picks and how his roster acumen, his personnel acumen has helped his team to, at that time, a 6-4 record, how it's been a successful year, and the fact that Gene is from Monroeville, Ohio, which is just west of Cleveland. It's a northern Ohio bedroom type community, small town, and what his roots were. Gene grew up in the Blesto system. He's always been in Ohio, a northern Ohio guy with some that short stint in northern Pennsylvania in the near Erie, in Edinburgh College, Edinburgh University. It's a
so what were they saying?
School.
Were they saying they should steal Gene, or should they get somebody
well,
like
Tony's
Gene?
Well, Tony's saying he's a general manager, has the general manager's title in Jacksonville, and Cleveland ought to give him the title as president, and that would not be a lateral move, and he would then be able to make that move. Well, wait a minute. That's okay. Randy Lerner's got to get on the phone and call Wayne Weaver and ask for permission. And these guys belong to a country club called the National Football League. You know, they're 32 of these guys, and they get along. I mean, they don't like sticking each other in the back. So I don't know if Randy Lerner would have the guts to do that. But that's what Tony was just saying. I think what Tony was saying is, for the Browns, it doesn't all have to be pomp and circumstance. It doesn't all have to be
a name.
You know, glitzy names. You don't have to throw $50 million at Mike Holmgren.
And you can develop your own, which is what the Jaguars did with Jeanie.
Exactly. He's saying that there are guys that we don't know of, guys with unrecognizable names who are having windfall success such as Gene. Who knows? Maybe Randy Lerner read the story and said, yeah, I remember that guy because I called Wayne Weaver about him a year ago.
And they said no.
And Wayne then hit him with the general manager's tag, which meant that there was nothing I could do. Yeah, I think I'm going to call Wayne again, and this time ask permission again, and he'll have to give him the president's title this time. You know? Maybe that will happen. I don't know. But I can tell you that Gene Smith is valued by the Jackson by Wayne Weaver. I promise that.
355-NFL-1. Appreciate the call, Brandon. Let's grab Mike over on the west side of town. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Happy to do it.
Dick, at the beginning of the season, you'd mentioned that if we were in December, the first week in December, and the Jaguars were still in the playoff hunt, we would consider this a successful season.
Absolutely.
And I agree with that comment. And I think it kind of leads to one point of the fan lack of support. Is a lot of the fans, in my opinion, I may be wrong, but don't seem, the ones that aren't coming back, the 20,000 that didn't renew, just don't seem to be interested in, I don't say interested, but they expect the team to blow out other teams that are like a Buffalo or something like that, and that just doesn't happen in the NFL, and it's taken me 14 years to figure this out. The NFL is too competitive to have other teams be blown out, and any team can win on any given Sunday.
Mike's pretty astute there, Vic.
Yeah, I would hope that we're past that. I mean, that was 1995.
Well,
this is 2009.
People still have to realize that. I mean, the National Football League is the most competitive sports league going. I mean, that's what it is.
Mike, let me give you some sad facts. The attendance for this Sunday's game appears as though it's going to be very bad. This could be a record-setting low. Tickets distributed are painfully, painfully depressed. When this week began, I had heard that they were barely over 40,000. We have some, in fact, we've got some weather on Saturday that if, I worry that if that stuff doesn't blow through here, that I'm really concerned. What I'm trying to say is I'm really concerned that we could have another one of those 2004 Houston games. Yeah. We can't afford that anymore. I promise I am giving you the straight story. We are, to quote Christmas Vacation, we're on the edge of hell. I mean, we are there. This we don't have that cushion anymore.
Since you've gone there, do you want to bring up the piece of video?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Because I don't know if it's credible or not.
It was on a news station.
Do you want to talk about
it? No, just we'll leave it alone. Just
some kind
you're
of
walking right down that. I mean, you're walking.
Well,
right
I was
to
sent
edge.
A video today from a Fox. LA.com, is that right?
It was
right?
From a news station in Los Angeles.
And they were interviewing the developer of the new stadium in Los Angeles. He said some really scary things. He said there's a 50% chance that a team will be playing in the Rose Bowl in 2010. And he said there's a 100% chance.
All that does.
Team will be playing there in 11.
Yeah.
He didn't say who the team is. But, I mean, you know.
When you see the attendance numbers here, though, it's not hard to guess what he's
getting at. What I can't understand is why isn't any of this scaring the fans of this team? Why is it not initiating or igniting some kind of charge in, you know, as far as buying tickets are concerned.
And you're saying from the fans because of with Touchdown Jacksonville
pushing.
Yeah, but
they're working on this Indianapolis game. And I know, and
it's got to go beyond that.
It's national television, and the hope is that we'll make a big display, and maybe we can get out our wiggle sticks and all that, and everyone will say, see, everything's just fine in Jacksonville. But we know it's not. This isn't about just a Thursday night game. This is about every game. Mostly, this is going to be about this offseason. Yeah. They got to really sell tickets this offseason, or we're in trouble. But I am very, very concerned. I'm scared about this Sunday. I'll leave it at that.
And we'll go to a break. We'll be back with another segment of Jaguars This Week to wrap up the first hour after this on News Talk Radio WOKV.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Broadcast this evening brought to you by JustX Watches. You can get yours this holiday season exclusively at Espling Jewelers. Brian Sexton, Vic Ketchman, Jeff Loggeman, Joe Fortunato. Phone lines are exploding. Joe, if you'll slide it up, I'll grab Robert there. Thank you very much. And Gulf Breeze. Hello, Robert. Welcome to the show.
Hey, I just wanted to comment on seeing if Vince Young is a winner in his eyes. How about T-Bad? That's not sounding so bad now, is it?
What?
Right?
I'm lost. What's the question?
Restate it, Robert.
If you said Vince Young was a winner in his eyes, and you said that about Tebow too, right?
Wait. When did I say that Vince Young was a winner in my eyes?
No, you said that. That's what they said. That's what the
right.
Titans owner said.
Right. Okay, now I got you. I got you.
I can see it in his eyes.
We joke about people who say, I can see it in his eyes. Yeah, okay. So what's the second part of it?
You said that the same thing about Tebow.
Well,
he's being facetious.
We're just being
flippant.
Flippant, yes.
Yeah, no, that was a joke. But anyway, the real question was that what's the big deal about playing in the West Coast? Why is it so difficult for us? Is it just a time change or?
Well, you know, let me be first on this because you know in Seattle you could clearly say, look, when they went to Seattle, boy, they didn't play well. In San Francisco, I had no problem with how hard they played, how productive they were. They just made some critical mistakes in critical areas. And number one, red zone and kicking. You can't beat any team when you have red zone turnovers.
Right.
But if you looked at the performance of them as a team, I thought, exception of the scoreboard, they played hard, they played well. Defensively, I thought they played well enough to give themselves a chance, even though they don't rush the passer very well. And offensively, from the last drive of the first half and then through the second half, they moved the ball at will.
I agree. You know, I think in Seattle you had a case of a team making its first trip to the West Coast since 2004. It didn't know, even the veteran players on this team didn't know what to expect. David Garrard wasn't even a starter back then.
Well, and two things happened in Seattle. One, your best receiver got suspended,
right,
for the game, and your best defensive player played a horrific game.
Rasheem Mathis had a terrible game. He had a game that can keep a guy out of the Pro Bowl. I mean, because when those highlights get out there. And people say, hey, look, oh, he's getting killed. They that sticks in their mind, and then when they vote, they don't vote for him. That's how bad he was that day. It's not as though other guys haven't had that kind of day, but Rasheem Mathis doesn't have him very often.
No. So, I mean, to me, this game in San Francisco, I have no problems with. I thought they came to play. I just thought that they just made mistakes, and you can't do that.
And here's
another San Francisco's pretty doggone good.
That's the other one. I think San Francisco has a better roster than the Jaguars. I really do. I think the Jaguars have a star running back that is better than anybody they have on offense, and I think the Jaguars have a better quarterback. But you know, on that day, Alex Smith was pretty good, and other than that, I think the 49ers have a better roster. I think they have
premier tight end.
They are better. They are better on both lines, no doubt in my mind.
I don't agree offensively. I think San Francisco's line may have looked better because the Jaguars don't rush the passer because teams have been shredding them up front.
Well, let me put it this way.
Defensive line, yeah.
Let me put it this way. This is how I always do it when it comes down to which is better. if you could have the Jaguars roster or the 49ers roster, which one would you take?
I'd take this one.
Really?
But I would take Michael Crabtree, Vernon Davis.
No, you can't do that.
Paris Harrelson.
Patrick Willis.
Going forward for the future, you know, I mean, they do have some exciting young players. Michael Crabtree may be the best young prospect that I've seen once he gets the ball in his hands and what he does with it.
And there's a guy that didn't play in that game, Nate Clements.
They paid a pretty penny for
him. He's in the doghouse out there.
Yeah,
well,
sure
plus
is.
He's been hurt.
Mm-hmm.
What'd they give him? An $80 million deal?
It was enormous. That's all I know. It was like $22 million signing bonus,
yeah,
something
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, and an $80 million value. It's on injured reserve, so not even playing for them this year. Mm-hmm. They do, you know, the Manny Lawson was a guy who first-round pick, and he had kind of gotten lost out there. He looked good.
Yeah, he's a good player. He's been productive for him. The one that that looked really good early in the year and looked good in the game, Paris Harrelson, the outside linebacker, who's, you know, he's a James Harrison type, short, great motor, strong, very good player. But Justin Smith and the nose tackle, Braille Franklin and Sopoaga, I mean, those three guys are rocks.
So if they had a quarterback,
you know, because it, put it this way, if you put Peyton Manning with those skill position guys that they got, whoo.
Yeah, because look what he's doing.
You know, that catch Vernon Davis made on the 4th-and-1. First of all, Clint Ingram, it's not like he blew the coverage. He was there.
No, he was there.
Second of all, the ball had to be dropped perfectly over
good throw.
Ingram and over Vernon Davis's shoulder. So Vernon Davis is making an over-the-shoulder catch as he's running and looking back into the sun, directly into the sun. Cano Sturk is one of those few parks where punt returners can find themselves looking right into the sun. Receivers can find themselves looking right into the sun. I don't know if it's the east, west, north, south placement of it or if it's the time of the year or whatever it is.
The field goes north-south, and looking into the sun is looking south, just so you know.
That field goes north-south.
Yes.
Which most do.
Yes.
That clearly goes north-south?
Oh, yeah, because we were looking across the field at the Santa Cruz Mountains in the bay.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Anyhow, that has always been a sunfield problem there. A problem sunfield.
Right. All right, we've reached the end of hour number one. We have hour number two forthcoming. And, of course, your calls, questions, comments, even complaints, as it appears Joe Fortunato is fielding on the phones, are welcome. 355-NFL1. News is next.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL1 or 1-800-355-NFL1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Here we go, hour number two of Jaguars This Week. And, folks, when you're looking for department store style at discount prices, look no further than your neighborhood Stein Mart. 7 Jacksonville locations this Christmas season. Stein Mart, once you go, you get it. Brian Sexton with Jeff Loggeman, Vic Ketchman, Joe Fortunato, and a full boat of phone lines. Before we do, though.
Yeah, do we want to get to our topic? So we covered a couple of them yet?
Well, we covered no Rasheen.
Yep.
So I think the one that we have to cover next is the offense-only meeting, which was the story of today.
Yeah, what do you think about that kind of a meeting? You okay with that?
I don't have a problem with any kind of meeting of that nature. Mm-hmm. I don't know what was said,
us. I mean, I can remember a players-only meeting in 95, late in the 95 season. What would a player say in players-only meetings?
It's basically just to try to get something on track, you know, or to stop, you know, something that you don't like. I mean, it's no different than a business meeting. Hey, we need to have a meeting. We've got some problems or we got some issues or whatever.
So what would be the issues coming up that would prompt a meeting after the San Francisco game?
Production, you know, as far as points on the mm-hmm. board. I mean, and the reason I say that is that you look at the Jaguars' offensive ranking, 12th in the National Football League, you would expect an offensive ranking to also match in the points per game scored category. And that doesn't match right now. The Jaguars, 12th in the National Football League in offensive yardage per game, mm-hmm. 22nd
yeah.
in points per
yeah.
game.
Yeah, I saw that. That's not good.
So if I had to guess, or if I was to say, hey, look, you know, we have a meeting, that's one of the things that I'd want to talk about. Is, hey, we need to get production in the end zone. Mm-hmm. Points.
Does a field goal kicker go to the offense only meeting?
No.
He does.
But hey.
Where's the kicker?
I said during the radio broadcast and that, hey, look, you know, you keep having games like that, and they're bringing kickers in to work out the next week.
Mm-hmm.
Josh is right now for the year 60%.
Mm. Yeah, but that's...
There was a lot of misses early on that were long kicks, yeah, and he had one blocked. I understand that.
And there was a bad hold in there,
too. Let's ignore all of that.
Okay.
In the last, was it four games, he's 50%.
Mm-hmm. He's in a slump. There's no question.
He's in a slump. And in those last four games, the longest one was from 53.
Mm-hmm.
Where's it at? Here. Last four games, 53 no good, 27 good, 49 no good, 21 good, 29 good, 40 no good, 32 good, 21 no good. The one in San Francisco, that was an extra point.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to be better.
Mm-hmm.
355 NFL 1, 355-6351.
What did you hear about the offensive meeting?
David was...
He volunteered this?
Oh, yes. And your opinion of that?
An offense-only meeting should mean offense-only.
Well, I was not invited to the meeting.
Well, I know that. And there's no reason to talk about it outside of that room.
Okay.
That's my opinion.
I was surprised. I mean, I've done this for 38 years, and I know that...
It's okay if you've heard about it, whispers.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to come out and talk about it. I mean, hey, look, it's just something else for the media to go and ask all your teammates, hey, what was this about?
Mm-hmm.
They don't need that line of questioning. Just don't talk about it.
I had a deep throat on the 95 meeting.
Yeah, what'd you find out about that one?
I found out that it was short, that some guys called the meeting because it was going to be a Coughlin complaint session. And
It was headed that way.
Oh, yeah. It was almost going to be an insurrection or a mutiny. And a couple guys stood up in the room and said, this is crap. And, you know, who agrees with me or something like that? Next thing you know, the meeting broke up.
Wonder who said that.
Did I get bad information?
I don't know. Who said that?
Jim Lagerman! You know, he's a coach kind of guy.
Who?
You. You're loyal to the coach.
No, I wasn't loyal to him.
Tell what happened in the meeting then.
It was exactly what you said. People wanted to moan and complain.
But
and
it I ended said, quickly.
Yeah, I just told these guys, we're wasting our breath. You know, it's not about him, it's about us. You know?
You're right.
And that's what it is about. You know, stop complaining about him. Start doing your job. And then we'll win. And then everybody's happy.
I'm just delighted to know that I provided accurate information.
Yeah, you're pretty much on.
355 NFL 1. Let's grab a couple of calls here. Let's start with Mike, who joins us from the beach. Hello, Mike.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call tonight.
Sure.
I just I heard in the San Francisco game that the 49ers had moved Alex Smith into the spread offense to help him mm-hmm. get away from some of the pass rush, and I thought that maybe something similar like that would work for...
Hold on.
Wait, you must mean another game.
But before you go there, just to kind of let you know, Mike, the spread offense may be the least productive formation for protecting the passer.
Mm-hmm.
Because a true spread, Mike, is five down linemen and nobody else. And
empty
it's
backfield.
Five-man protection, empty backfield. It's not good for protecting the quarterback.
And by the way, no, go ahead, Mike, and then I have some really stunning news.
I just wanted to say that it seems like getting David a couple yards away from the line would give him a little more time to see where the pressure's coming from.
Well,
and, you know,
in a perfect
thinking.
World, you don't want your quarterback looking at the pressure at all. In a perfect world, the quarterback identifies where he needs to go in a quick fashion and beats the rush, no matter how good the rush is. Vic had asked about my smart board segment on Monday night. You had also mentioned, I think, on your Monday show about my opinion about the sacks on David.
That's correct.
I think in that game, I would put three sacks on David after looking at it.
I gave you four.
Yeah, and you could maybe go four, but three really. And the two plays that I telestrated, I didn't solely single out David as being responsible. I showed two plays, and they were the sack caused fumbles and where he had options that the ball could have been delivered immediately if they were anticipated. But I also showed that where the protection broke down, where David wanted second options and didn't have time. I let people formulate their own opinions on what was right and what was wrong. But on those two plays, David had the ability to get the ball out quick. And he got hungry. He got hungry. He got greedy. And he can't always be greedy as a quarterback. Sometimes you got to take what you get. On the fourth down and two play, in which it was a sack caused fumble, he had Mike Sims Walker in the flat if he stands up and plants his back foot and throws it. On the second down one where it was sack caused fumble from the backside, he had Mike Thomas. Mike Thomas had 5 yards separation from the defender, but he was trying to hold it to find Mercedes. So quarterbacks can protect themselves. Yes, you have a young group on the edge, and you've got three guys in the middle that you want to see play better. But the quarterback is also responsible for sacks.
By the way, Derek Harvey got a sack on Monday.
Oh, that ended up being a cost fumble?
Yeah.
He had a very productive day. Maybe his best game ever.
When the ball is fumbled by the quarterback, somebody has to get a sack.
They didn't call that a fumble in the game, did they? Didn't they move?
You're talking about the early drive? They called it an incomplete pass.
I guess they reviewed it, and now they're calling it a fumble.
Okay, so now there are 11 sacks on the season then.
I believe
they
so.
They came out of the game without one.
If Ryan Robinson is listening, please call in and clarify that for us, Ryan.
Derek Harvey had a great game. I mean, he had a great game.
He now has a sack.
He had I think his best game as a pro. He was outstanding in the running game. He showed great energy. He showed great effort. He had some very good pass rush moves in which Alex Smith was three-stepping and getting the ball out. I was very impressed. He had a very good game.
355 NFL 1. Let's take a break. We'll come back. More to talk about with respect to the Jaguars, the situation with the playoffs and the teams that are contending for those wild card spots. We'll talk about all of it. You're listening on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
Nobody helps you fans get ready for game day better than the folks at Gate. Snacks, food, drinks, and more. Stop by Gate today or on your way to the stadium on Sunday. Back with more Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna. You have somewhere you want to go, or I've got the schedules of the playoff contenders. Is that where you were headed?
Yeah, I'm looking at them.
Let's agree on who they are. Pittsburgh, Denver, Baltimore, Miami, Houston.
No. Just worry about the 3, 6, and 5 teams. I mean, we're going too far if we include Denver in there.
Well, they're 7-4, and but their schedules.
Is it stiff?
Well, at Kansas City.
No.
Well,
Go ahead.
At Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Oakland.
No.
At Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Kansas City at home.
Okay, so they got two possible losses. They could go to 10-6. I see 10-6 now. That would put them in the
Kansas
mix.
Kansas City beat Pittsburgh.
Yeah, but that was flukish. Right. That was very flukish.
Just point it out.
What I'm seeing, the advantage the Jaguars have, other than the fact that they got three straight home games, which is nice, the advantage the Jaguars have is that Pittsburgh and Baltimore play head-to-head in the next to last weekend of the season. So one is going to knock out the other. The Jaguars won't have to go head-to-head with one of those two. They could be in a situation where we don't have a three or more club tiebreaker. We may, if the Jaguars do their due diligence here and they may only get caught in a head-to-head situation with, you know, Pittsburgh or Baltimore. That's the way it's looking to me.
Okay.
Although now when you read this Denver schedule and I see there's possible two losses in there, they could get dragged into this, so I stand corrected.
Well, and I went and looked at Miami and Houston also.
Yeah, they're gone. They're gone. Miami's schedule is, oh.
Well, Miami has New England at home, then they're here, then they're at Tennessee, then they have Houston at home and Pittsburgh at home.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
that's a tough schedule.
Yeah, that's really tough.
Houston is here, then they have Seattle at home, then they're at St. Louis, then they're at Miami, then they have New England at home.
It's doable, but I got a feeling that last week's loss, collapse to Indianapolis was the kill shot for them.
Okay.
Could have taken the wind out of their
sails.
So you're
just looking at Pittsburgh and Baltimore then right now for this purpose. And let me
write
down it.
But Denver, right. When you talk about two possible losses, they could get dragged
into
this.
Well, let me give them to you again. Pittsburgh is at home against Oakland this week, at Cleveland, at home against Green Bay, at home against Baltimore, then on the road at Miami January 3rd. Mm-hmm. Already went through Denver. Here it is again, at Kansas City, at Indy, Oakland, at Philadelphia, Kansas City. They have three of the next four on the road, and two of those are Indianapolis and Philadelphia. Baltimore's at Green Bay this week, then Detroit at home, Chicago at home, at Pittsburgh, at Oakland.
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking that Denver gets the one wild card, although now, you know, that may not happen. They may get in this tie. But I'm thinking Denver gets the one wild card. Pittsburgh and Baltimore, one knocks out the other. And then if the Jaguars, we're assuming that the Jaguars would finish 10-6. They would find a way to win four of the remaining five games. And if they finish 10-6, they could be into a head-to-head job with either Baltimore or Pittsburgh. Okay. Although those two teams, they could win out. I mean, who knows?
Palomalu coming back? Suggs coming back?
Suggs will be back. Palomalu, I don't think he's coming back. I think he's done.
It's two knee injuries for him this year, right? This is a knee again?
Is it the same knee that he injured? Same, but it's a different ligament. It's a different injury.
Okay.
They've lost Aaron Smith and Palomalu, their two best defensive players. No, not their two best defensive, but their best defensive lineman and their best defensive back. And it's hurting them big time because their defense is collapsing at critical moments. Baltimore's defense looks like it's over the hill. It's not the same group. They're now getting run on, too. They've got a tough one here, Monday night in Green Bay. So the Jaguars could be in a, you know, they could further...
If they can beat the Texans and the Dolphins,
yeah.
Right.
I mean, if they win Sunday and Baltimore loses, they could find themselves tied with Pittsburgh. I don't think Pittsburgh will lose to Oakland. Did you see?
Not at home.
Did you see Mike Tomlin's line in his press conference on Monday?
No.
We are going to unleash hell in December.
It's great.
That's a great line.
It is.
Defending Super Bowl champs. Hey, by the way, I only got to see a bit of that game before the satellite on the plane went out. I was impressed with Dennis Dixon.
He was fantastic, and Tomlin really kind of needled his starting quarterback this week. We need to find more ways to use Dennis Dixon. So, you know, you're going to see a little bit of slash.
Well, you know, we didn't get to see a whole lot of Dixon because he got injured his senior year at Oregon, you know, played on the West Coast. He's a big kid.
That situation that happened there last week with Roethlisberger is very interesting. It's not as it appears.
Then how is
it? Oh, it's a juicy little story. And you could figure this out because you know Roethlisberger's a drama queen.
Totally.
Well, early in the week, they did the test, no concussion. He said he was fine. He was practicing. Everything was great. Late in the week, he said to the trainer and started to tell people, I guess Tomlin too, I'm getting headaches. Of course, Tomlin knew right away. He wanted the old arm around the shoulder. He wanted the excuse for if I play bad on Sunday, which is this guy's M.O. All right, he likes a little hug. I covered another quarterback.
I was just about to say that.
Bradshaw.
Yeah, you used to say that.
Oh, geez, just like him. Except this time, Tomlin had enough. He said, you're out. We're shutting you down. You're done. You know? Oh, no, I can play. No, Ben. You're out. Well, then Hines Ward, who doesn't like him, that they don't get along.
I didn't know that.
Oh, no.
Tomlin and Hines Ward?
No, Hines Ward and Roethlisberger don't get along. Then Ward just
this, I read those
that's
comments.
Not my. That's not his. That's not the way he is. I mean, now there's a tough guy. You want to talk about a football player.
Right.
You want to talk about a guy who is all team. And, Jeff, if he's your teammate, you know
I'd love to have him on my team.
He's a fabulous football
player. He'd be one of the first players you'd want to have.
Oh, absolutely.
To build a team.
Oh, and he took Roethlisberger down hard, man. I mean, he nailed him.
He softened it a little bit in his apology.
Yeah, but he I think he knew he was going to apologize, mm-hmm. but he was going to take a shot first.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't think the coach minded it at all. The drama queen stuff's got to stop. I mean,
well,
he's a big tough quarterback, but he's got to stop with the handoff.
He wants attention. I don't ever want to question a guy when it comes to a head injury, because it's an injury that's hard to put a finger on.
No, he had a head injury.
No, I know, but it's hard to. I'll never question him, but Ben is very. Very much the attention getter.
He wants attention.
When ESPN shows up, he goes,
Bingo.
You know, he's
bingo.
Like that.
And he was fine all week, and the test said no concussion. And then all of a sudden they got headaches. Well, what's the doctor going to say? And they're going on your information. It's like Ward said, there were lots of times I lied. Lots of times I said I was straight and I wasn't.
Which you shouldn't do now that some of the new information's coming out. But that's, you know, anyway.
And now it appears that the league is going to change their policy. If you have a concussion, you don't go back into the game.
I'm going to say something here. There's no one who's ever played this game at any level of any intensity that didn't get a concussion or two playing football. I don't care if it's high school football. I don't care what it is. You play this and you butt heads, especially in the days when spearing was practiced every day. You got concussions. Not everybody turns into John Mackey. All right, we're all under this head kick. Hey, what about Jim Otto? What about, you know what I mean? The Raiders center. I mean his legs, his whole body. It wasn't about his head. What about the Tampa Bay defensive lineman? Blew out every nerve in his knee. Had to have his leg amputated. Well, I mean, it's when you play this game, there is a element of risk involved. This can't, you know, we're into this head mania now. We're into this concussion mania. It's almost become a form of entertainment, you know, of controversy.
Well, it's definitely that.
Well, but I appreciate what the league is doing, and that hey, it's a very very young topic because I mean, where's the science? You with a ligament, you can take an MRI and you can say, whoa, you know, 50% torn. This is the timeline. With a head,
it's all in information.
It's all in feedback. I mean, there are guys. I mean, heck, the Mike Webster. The linebacker in New England.
Ted Johnson.
Ted Johnson. I mean, this guy can't function.
There's a lot. There are a lot of coaches from that older generation. Bill Walsh had some form of Alzheimer's or some kind of dementia when he died. And
right.
he carried it for a long time. You know, was that post-concussion syndrome? We don't know. But yes, football players take tremendous risks, and the league has to do everything they can to protect this head thing going on. But you take risks to your whole body, your knees, your back, your hips. Look at these. A few years ago, these coaches got into a thing with the players where a field goal kicking thing at practice in OTAs. If the kick was made, the coaches would run. If the kick was missed, the players would run. All right? Standing out there. Kick was made, the coaches ran. Oh, my God. I mean, it looked like somebody emptied a hospital ward of crippled people. I mean, they're running across the field. You could time them with a sundial. They're limping. And dragging their legs and everything else. And these are not old men. These are the ravages of having played football.
And they're going to be there no matter how.
No matter what you do.
No, right. No matter how many precautions that you do take and how you improvise and improve the equipment, there's still going to be concussions.
I mean, these older coaches, you hear all the time, oh, he's having a hip replacement. He's having a knee replacement.
355 NFL1. You move pretty good for an old guy, Loggy.
Shoot.
He's still okay.
Yeah. No, he does.
Yeah. I've noticed that. He's,
saw him in the gym.
He's awfully limber.
San Francisco on Saturday morning and Sunday morning.
If I don't do it, quality of life goes down.
All right, we need a break here for news at the bottom of the hour.
To talk to Brian, Jeff, and Vic, dial 355-NFL-1 or 1-800-355-NFL-1. Now, back to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna on News Talk Radio WOKV.
All right, I think we've covered it all. We talked about the offense-only meeting. We went through schedules. We talked about the impact of Rasheen sitting for a third straight game. We mentioned the smart board, and you talked about Scobie, right?
Yeah.
All right, there you go.
Show's over.
Cross it. Right. In 20 minutes.
You got some callers.
Yeah, we do.
Well, we didn't have a show last week. Were we cutting out early today?
Do you want to? Yeah, we're going till
4 hours tonight,
folks. Lee's in Ponte Vedra. Hello, Lee.
Hey, don't cut out early.
Okay.
All right. Good evening, gentlemen.
Hey, Lee.
By the way, Vic, if you need help with your Christmas tree, my wife is just excellent, and just have your wife call my wife.
How much does she charge?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe dinner or something. I don't know. Something easy.
No, my wife is just fantastic with that Christmas decorations crap.
So mine. She's incredible.
Why not the Christmas decorations stuff?
She dresses it up. Oh, it's incredible. Hey, guys, I had a kind of a technical question. Offensive line against the 4-3 or 3-4. I'm interested if we make adjustments on the splits on the line when you go.
What splits? Three, the offensive three, line splits or the defensive line splits?
I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
There's only splits.
Yeah, I know, but I just want to make sure he's not thinking that the defensive line.
Offensive line splits when they're going 3-4 against a 3-4 or a 4-3.
Yeah, but see, Lee, there no one varies the splits in the NFL.
No, they do.
It's minor. Do. It's not like Navy.
No. It's not radical. But the thought is that on certain plays, and sometimes it can be a key, is that you widen a split to help move a guy farther away from where you want him to be.
Create a running lane.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And in the past, I know on teams that I've played on, when we played a 3-4, the splits would get bigger as compared to a 4-3. Because 4-3 penetrates.
The
more.
Reason, though, you don't see a lot, it's got to be real subtle, is because if they see that you've widened the split, they can pretty much guess you're going to run the ball. Because when you widen the split, you invite the pass rush. That's why you see in the NFL, you see most of the line splits are very, very tight. It's shoulder-to-shoulder stuff because they're more concerned about protecting the quarterback than they are about creating running lanes. Is that correct, Jeff?
About right.
Well, we went up against the 49ers that had, guys, Jeff, I think you said doing 200-pound dumbbells.
I did, by the way, get that confirmed from Tony Pashos and that there are
please.
Three guys that work out with 200-pound dumbbells on that team.
Oh, my gosh. They could curl me easily.
I stopped doing that.
Did you?
Anyway, no, it was a serious question. If a team rotates between a 3-4 and a 4-3, obviously the line is set, and you can't make that adjustment. So I was just curious as to how they –
I know what you're saying. I know you're kind of asking, do you play the man or the ball? Where do you position yourself according to how they align? And the answer is that's all part of game planning and scheming, and the coaches handle that. I'll give you a better one. Lee, draw this up on a board and see if you can figure this out. Okay, put your five linemen. Your five circles on a board. And now go up, and you're going to put an X inside one of the circles that represents the guy who snaps the ball, the center. Now put that X in where the left guard is. Make the left, what would have been the left guard, the center. All right? Put an X in there. And now put your defensive lineman in position. Do you line up on the man, or
you ignore the X?
You ignore the X because if you don't ignore the X, then you're going to be unbalanced as heck, and they're just going to sweep you.
Yeah, they're going to go the gap.
So, I mean, that's kind of what you're talking about, I think, although this is awfully technical to do a pictorial on radio.
I got it. But, yeah, it's just a question. Obviously, I hate to say this, but Monroe struggled. And they're obviously had three down linemen.
Well, I don't know if that necessarily falls on Eugene. Some of that also may fall on the person or the communication, because on a 3-4, the communication is so important, because a lot of times you got to figure out who you block. And on the fourth down and two play, Paris Harrelson was turned free. Eugene went out to block safety. Now, I don't think that's the way it's supposed to happen.
I think he goofed.
I think he messed up. But those are the challenges facing the 3-4. But communication, and I don't know where that's supposed to come from. But it could have happened from elsewhere. Don't know.
Appreciate the phone call, Lee. Let's move along. We've got Jeff, who joins us also from Ponte Vedra. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks a lot. Jeff, it's a real privilege to talk to you. I grew up out in Long Island. I moved down here about 3 years ago. So, JETS, I got green blood in me.
Uh-oh.
And you're real fun to watch.
Change it to teal, man. We need some tickets. Buy some tickets.
Well, believe me, my blood's turning teal. There's some teal in there now. I mean, it's real fun being able to root for two teams.
Gotcha.
Of course, that game a couple weeks ago, I didn't know who to pull for, but it's great that the Jags won, obviously. I just wanted to touch on the concussion thing. Jeff, you had a teammate across the ball, big old Al Toon. I mean, he got his bell rung so much. I remember reading an article about how he can't – this was years ago in Sports Illustrated, I think. He couldn't watch ceiling fans.
Yeah, he had headaches. Real headaches. Bad.
And the thing about concussions, I think, it's like bruising of the brain, isn't it?
Yep.
And the brain is – the body's computer. I mean, it runs everything. And if your brain's out of whack, not only can you not function at your optimal level, you're just not the same. And look, we've seen guys get paralyzed a lot. I mean, Dennis Byrd, Jeff, Scotty Mercereau, and Dennis Byrd. And thank goodness Dennis was all right. But I forget the guy's name on Detroit.
Well, Mike Utley. But let me tell you this about Dennis Byrd. He had a broken neck, and he's not all right. He's struggling physically.
Really?
I mean, to this day, severe pain, and is having a tough time, And with the head injuries, I actually watched a special this week, and they talked about what happens with a concussion. And if you can imagine – your skull stopping quickly, and the brain gets slammed up into the front part of the skull and then back, and then it's shaking. I mean, that's what's going on. So scary stuff, because I've had them, and I worry. I worry about, what's going to happen to me maybe, 10 years down the road. Well, those things that I went through, will they affect me in some way?
Have you ever had vertigo?
I don't know exactly what vertigo is.
Dizziness.
Yeah, oh, yeah, from concussions, absolutely.
I mean...
Now, years...
Yeah, years later. I mean, do you lie down in the bed and the room spins?
I had one incident this past year that scared me, to where I was in a boat, and I've always had great sea legs, and I didn't.
Did you immediately?
You'll know when you have vertigo. I mean, you'll lie down in bed and you'll grab the headboard because you think you're going to fly out.
I thought maybe I've got an inner ear infection. And I went to see a hearing specialist, and after he got done with some of the tests, he said, "So, how many concussions did you have while you were playing?"
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, Jeff. I'll get you a drool bucket for Christmas, and we'll go fishing.
I would appreciate that.
We'll take a break here, come back and wrap this program up before it goes too much further. You're listening to Jaguars This Week on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. Welcome back. Final segment, Jaguars This Week here on News Talk Radio WOKV. And Jason's been holding up the road in Valdosta for a while. Hello, Jason. Welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I just got a quick question for you. How do you guys feel about the upcoming game against the Patriots. Do you think we actually have a shot to beat them this year, judging by the Monday night game, or do you think they'll still give us some trouble?
I haven't even looked at them. I didn't even hardly see any of that game.
I've watched the New England a couple times this year, and their defense for many years was extremely dominant, and it's nowhere near that. When you have a defense to where you're going to go for it on offense on 4th and 2, and you're not even past the 50 down the 50-yard line at Indianapolis, that ought to tell you what Bill Belichick thinks about his defense. So, absolutely, it's a game the Jaguars have a chance in.
How about Tom Brady? Did you see the game the other night? I didn't get a chance to. I wasn't at home.
I didn't watch the whole thing. I had the radio show, and then I had some other stuff to do afterwards, so I didn't get to see the whole thing. He's not what he was, but he's still real good. I do see some cracks in the armor.
In his armor or in the Patriots?
In his.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's
not as accurate a passer as he used to be. Still very accurate, but he's not lethal. He's not deadly as he used to be.
No. No, he's not. And I wonder if the star status has affected him a little bit.
Arm's getting old, Jeff.
I don't agree with that. You know, he's still very young. Doesn't have a lot of miles on him. He throws the ball a ton.
Yeah, he does.
But if you look at the numbers, New England, I don't know if you saw the stat. Number of throws per game in the New England offense, and, you know, back when Tom Brady was in the early stages of being their quarterback, it was, you know, 30 times, then it went to 40, then it went to, you know, 45, and then it went to 50, and now, you know, it's way up in there. I mean, I don't think anybody throws the ball more than them, maybe. They throw the ball more than Indianapolis.
Yeah. The Saints, you know, are the ones that amaze me. That they have a strong running game. I mean, they were always just throw. Now they got it all.
Drew Brees, NFL MVP right now.
I would agree.
Him and Peyton Manning.
I would agree.
Neck and neck.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the funny thing is that receiver Meacham, they drafted a couple years ago, and they thought he was a bust. And as Brees has gotten better, so has this kid. Mm-hmm.
Hey, a great quarterback can make an average wide receiver look really good.
The caller asked about the New England game, and I have put that in the L column. I'm not saying that the New England Patriots can't be beaten, but I've, for sake of clarity and how and what as far as what perspective I should have on the other games, I've assigned an L to that game, which means that the Jaguars have to win all the other ones.
All right.
I think that's the proper perspective. Win the 3 at home and in Cleveland. That's my formula.
Indianapolis Colts are obviously the big one here at home, that Thursday night game.
I think they'll be locked, and I think they'll play their reserves.
Okay.
Oh, would that be nice?
That's what I think is going to happen.
Polian came out this week and said he does not believe in momentum, which means if they already have a playoff spot and the division locked up, so when they lock up home field, which how many games is it going to take for them to lock up?
Two. I think they'll have it all wrapped up.
Yeah, they could have it all wrapped up if they win the next game.
They could have it wrapped up, come in here and say, we're not playing.
I mean, what value is there in having an undefeated season? We just had one of those in 2007, and what did that get the Patriots?
Immortality, it could.
But you still have to win three more.
That's all right.
I mean, so.
Yeah, I know, but the chance of going undefeated.
Look at
the
this
distance.
Look at this
is
though.
Immortality. How could you turn that chance down?
Yes, I tell you how I could. I'm going to look at this from the Colts' perspective. This has been a team that has been on a great long run, but they only have one Super Bowl title to show for it. They have been a postseason disappointment. 7-9 in the Peyton Manning era. Every one of those 9 losses represents a year gone. Do you know which team in the AFC South has last won a postseason game?
Yeah, this one.
The Jacksonville Jaguars. All right? Now, if you are the Colts, you're thinking, I got to be closer to the end of this run than the beginning.
Sure.
So I better get something out of this or I'm going to be the Atlanta Braves. All right? I better get at least one more out of this. I'm not thinking about piling up stats, and I'm not thinking about undefeated seasons. I'm thinking about what's the best thing to do to get to the Super Bowl and win it. That's my opinion.
But see, I don't think that's the best way to get to a Super Bowl.
You think you do the Giants thing?
I believe in momentum.
Okay. And there's a lot to be said for that. about that because Coughlin proved it with the Giants in 07.
You've seen both teams this week. You watch the tape of the Texans and the Colts, mm-hmm. and you watch the Monday night game. So right now, who's more complete, the Colts or the Saints?
Colts. I mean, they've got a quarterback who in a regular season, has made huge throws at clutch times. They've got two pass-rushing defensive ends that are head and shoulders above Mario Williams.
I'm not Texans. I'm sorry. Saints.
Between which team?
Colts and the Saints?
Yeah,
you watched the Colts game this week against the Texans, and you watched the Saints against the Patriots on Monday night. So between the
Saints have the ability to be more balanced on offense. I think defensively they're pretty similar. New Orleans is not as talented up front in their front seven, but they're more talented in the back end.
Okay.
With Darren Sharper, they signed a few guys. McKenzie and McAllister played the other night. But their frontline guys combined with some of those veteran guys, I think they're more talented in the back end.
Right.
And they're playing extremely aggressive.
But here's the thing. Drew Brees is 1-2 in the postseason, and Peyton Manning is 7-9 in the postseason. Then you got a Tom Brady, and you got a Ben Roethlisberger. Who else would be in this thing? Romo's a playoff dog. McNabb's just been okay. Favre has not been good in recent years. I'll give you another one. Phillip Rivers. He's a postseason tough guy. Uh-huh. So, you know, Rivers, Roethlisberger, if they were to be in it, at this point, that's iffy. Brady, these guys are real good in the postseason. And then you got the other guys. Favre hasn't been very good lately. Manning has not been good overall in his career. And Brees is looking for win number two in the postseason.
Right. Wasn't involved in the postseason until... what, just 2 years ago?
No, he was with San Diego, and they lost to the Jets right away.
That one, right.
Now, he hasn't played poorly in the postseason, so I'm not laying it on him. But there is something to be said about quarterbacks who get it done in the playoffs.
All right. Well, Sunday's essentially a playoff game here.
Yeah. You know, this is the offense-only meeting you want on Sunday, and you want to meet in the end zone a lot.
All right. Mm-hmm. Drive home safe, guys.
Okay, thanks.
You too over there, Joe. And thanks for listening this evening to Jaguars This Week. Don't forget Sunday, Jaguars and Texans, 1 o'clock kickoff. And you'll hear it starting at 10 a.m. with the tailgate show. Pre-game show begins at noon. And whistle-to-whistle coverage followed by the Winn-Dixie post-game show and the scoreboard show. Have a great, safe night, everybody, in this rain.